Good morning.
Good morning.
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 Good morning.
Well, it got warm enough up in Clark this weekend that I have a small, probably 5 by 8 foot patch of grass that I can see.
Really? Congratulations.
Yeah, we're excited.
You know, there another 2 months, you'll be able to mow it.
I know, right? We moved in at the end of December. So every day I kind of go out into the yard and look, and it's like, oh, there's rocks there, and kind of excited to see what our landscaping looks like.
Yeah, it'll be good to get into May because April is just typically a really crappy month around here.
Yep.
Kendra, when I lived in Grand Lake, and we'd be going through a long, long, arduous winter. About this time of the year, we had a seasonal maintenance person come on board, and he lived the rest of the year in Delta, Colorado. And he would come and say, geez, I've already mowed my lawn 4 times. And we were incredulous. We could not believe, you know, we're still looking out at these huge drifts of snow that this guy's been mowing his lawn 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
At that point, we were pretty envious.
Yeah, my friends in Minnesota are transplanting their seedlings into their gardens right now. And a friend of mine already has like a cucumber plant that's starting to crawl. It's crazy.
Well, you might as well learn to deal with it because you're stuck where you're at right now. So, all right, looks like everybody's here. Let's go ahead and get started. Mark, do you have a start with your update?
Thanks, commissioners. Good morning. I had sent along again my weekly email update in terms of important items that I'll be working on this week and issues that have been brought forward by the commissioners. The first that I wanted to cover was just some follow-up budget notes. Thank you again for the good feedback we got this past Friday. That was very helpful as we continue to work on what will be the amended FY20 budget for the county. We are anticipating being able to get better quotations and bids on asphalt and materials for some of the road projects that we had anticipated for this coming season. We hope to have that theoretically by the end of the week. And with that information at our disposal, then we are going to be prepared to come back to the commissioners and talk to you about, again, that prioritization that we talked about relative to minor bridge replacements, asphalt projects, gravel, and some of the other things that we talked about in some detail on Friday. So we're going to have information at our disposal a little bit quicker than we expected. So that's good news. The other thing, following up on an item that Commissioner Corrigan had brought to our attention, Dan and I will be meeting this week to talk about the FY21 budget schedule, because we want to start moving very quickly on putting together the FY21 budget. So we can't fall behind as far as that schedule, and we'll be discussing just exactly what our outline is going to be for that going forward, keeping in mind some of the very important dates that we've got associated with that. Transition team also discussed both, I think primarily on Friday, but also we touched on it maybe ever so briefly on Saturday. I'm working with Ray in Public Works to put together a county transitional team, and this will be very focused on how we feel like our graduated reopening schedule will be put together for all of our county facilities. I want to make sure that's a good cross-sectional team of people that we've got across the landscape to make sure that we're good due consideration for people in some of the campus buildings, at the fairgrounds, at county maintenance facilities, to make sure that we've got a good outline of exactly what our protocol is going to be. Late on Friday, we had a good conversation with Mo. When I say we, that was Mo, myself, Eric, and Julie, in talking about that post-declaration spending authority. And you got a follow-up email from Mo late on Friday. What we want to do, and this is with some really good, I think, heads-up feedback from Eric, we want to be sure that we are up to speed in terms of what that post-declaration spending authority should look like, make sure that that is as updated as we can make it, making sure, really two very important items, making sure that it is in compliance with state statutes, and also that it's going to follow all the requisite requirements for what's going to eventually have to be our supplemental authority or supplemental authorization to balance everything within that EOC. So Eric gave us a good heads up on that, said, hey, we ought to be thinking about this and make sure that we bring this up to speed. So once we have everything in a good spot, we will bring that back forward to the commissioners in terms of your approval to make sure that that's in a place where we feel like we're comfortable. I've already left a message with Craig with GFOA to so that we can discuss a little further about the budget, the schedule, and what our calendar is going to be going forward with all the GFOA work. So I expect a call back from Craig before the day is out. Department head reports. You've now, I think, commissioners, begun to receive what I'll call is the updated format from all of your department heads. Please don't be bashful in terms of telling us if we can still do anything else to provide you better information in a better condensed format, making sure that we are meeting your expectations in terms of giving you good timely updates on everything going on within associated departments. Again, as you know, and you probably recognized, we've said that there's categories that we want every department head to include in their reports, i.e. budget, COVID-19 impacts, personnel, those kind of elements that are very important in terms of weekly or monthly up-to-date, timely updates for the commissioners. So please, by all means, again, let us know if you feel like there's more information or a different style of information that you feel would work for you along those lines. I will also be doing some follow-up with departments. I mentioned the fact that I've been doing one-on-ones with each of the departments to try and get a little better handle on exactly their most important issues and their most important projects. I will continue to do that, even going circling back around for some follow-ups. I'm going to do that today with the HR department. I'm also going to be meeting with the planning department this week. Once again, get a better handle on just exactly what are the most important issues, and then also trying to get a better idea of exactly what's going to be their most important budget outlines as we start to build that FY21 budget. Lots going on this week, but these are some of the higher end highlights, commissioners, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions or any follow-ups that you may have on the items that I've discussed so far this morning or what's contained in my email.
Not all at once.
I have just one thought. Thanks for all that, Mark. Because there is so much confusion about the Safer at Home order, I was wondering if an email to the Route County staff might be appropriate. I mean, I was thinking coming from you, but just articulating, there's a few things that come to mind for me. The first is that the governor is still saying that anyone who can work from home should work from home, and that hasn't changed. And then the second is Well, I think that's really the primary thing, and that all the mitigation protocols remain in place, and that people should continue to stay home to the extent possible. But I guess really just that one point. I was also thinking about the thing about office buildings, but that doesn't really apply to us because we're exempt as a critical government function. But I thought it, just because there's been so much confusion, that maybe an email to all staff would be warranted.
Beth, I'll be happy to do that. And as we have our conversations today, especially the Board of Health call today at noon, I think we'll probably get a little more clarity on a lot of these different very important topical issues. So with that good feedback and that good conversation that I know you're going to be conducting today, I think that'll allow me to be maybe a little more informative in terms of the email that I'll send out this afternoon. So I'll be glad to do that. And also, and I sent an email again last week as just of a general reminder, hey, everybody, you know, Mark's favorite expression, always be the example, never the exception. We want to make sure that we are being a good example for everybody in terms of wearing face masks. So let's be sure that we are following that protocol and that we're being good about that in the workplace most especially. So I'll make sure that I also include a note along those lines. So very, very happy to do that. And I'll make sure that gets out the door this afternoon.
So I have a question. So have we decided what we're doing under the governor's new safer at home order? I think we all kind of maybe have the idea in the back of our head what we're doing, but I don't know that we still think that we want to have as many people working from home as we want. I think we're all in agreement there. So I guess, we got the comments from the treasurer and the clerk about, you know, them potentially wanting to open our offices, and that's what prompted us to start. Well, we do need to have our own mitigation plan, but we haven't provided any direction to Mark and to the department heads and to the elected officials about how much we want to open up for right now. And I guess unless I missed something there, I'm just help here.
Hey, Doug, I don't know if the treasurer and the clerk were wanting to open up, or they were just trying to get prepared for the possibility of opening up. That might be one place to get some input from them. But I guess I thought Mark working on the county transition plan was going to sort of determine how and when we decide to open up. I wasn't under the impression we were making any changes under Safer at Home, but that we were in the process of putting together a transition plan for county government services specifically. But do you guys weigh in on if I was right about that?
I don't know that you're right or wrong. I just think that we ought to probably think about it a little bit. And, you know, whether it's the 50% workforce or whatever, I do think we ought to try to figure out how we're going to do that. And then us give some direction to our department heads about how many. So, Tim, go ahead. I interrupted.
No, that's fine, Doug. But, yeah, I see your point is that we're asking county management to come up with a plan, but we haven't actually given them a direction that we think we would like to go. So that's an interesting question. I guess the other question I would have is there a general sense, Mark, as to how effectively the county and our employees are able to perform their jobs and deliver services to the public? I mean, are we keeping up with things? Are we hearing from people that say that, hey, we really need to get back in the office to really be able to do our job?
Tim, that's a really good question, and not specifically that I have gotten any feedback that denotes that we're having any issues or problems along those lines, that we're still able to deliver services, that we are still able to perform our job functions, and that under the current protocol that we've got in place, that everything is still functioning smoothly. I will note that we did have an inquiry from the assessor's office relative to maybe any idea about timing about reopening the courthouse facility, even on a limited basis or with any safety protocols in place, simply because that in a lot of instances, the public likes to come in person when they come in for protests. As Gary pointed out, a lot of times they just feel more comfortable being able to meet with somebody in the assessor's office to walk through that. So his question to me was, do you have any sense in terms of when we feel like the courthouse would be open to public access? And I said, we don't at this point, Gary. And I guess if I was a betting guy, I would say that it was unlikely that we'd see that door open up through the month of May. So along those lines, Tim, if there's, I appreciate this conversation. If there's additional feedback that can be provided by the commissioners, that'll be very helpful for the transition team as we talk about these elements.
I'm still getting probably at least 5, sometimes 8 people a day that are ringing the Ring doorbell outside and want to get their license or make a payment to the treasurer or something like that. So I don't know if it might be worth a newsflash or something with Robin, since we are probably going to be close to the public still, if we're looking at another month, to maybe publicize that a little more, because we are still getting a lot of people that for some reason think that we're open for business as the doorbell goes off.
I guess I, Tim, I appreciate what you're saying about direction, but I guess I thought what we directed Mark to do was to work on it and come back to us with something that we could give feedback on. To me, we're obviously not reopening anything until we come up with a plan for reopening and what that looks like. And so that's obviously not this week, right? I mean, and maybe it's not next week either, who knows? And I do still think that we are, I'm supportive of the idea of a more gradual phased in, like starting with one-on-one, you know, starting with scheduled appointments where we can pretty strictly limit the number of people who are in the building at one time, and then gradually going to more of an actual like reopening where people can drop in. That's where I'm feeling like we should go.
I think that's just the kind of direction that we should be providing, rather than having management come up with a plan and the three of us go, no, that's a terrible idea. Why did you even think about doing it that way? So.
Well, I said that last week, so I don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that either, Beth. And I agree with both of you, but I think we ought to come up with a plan of, you know, appointment only and with a phone call and a meet at the door and those kind of things. And I personally think we ought to give direction to Mark at that too, that, you know, we want to phase the opening, and the first phase will be phone in appointments and meet at the door, and the building continues to be locked for a couple weeks or a month yet. So, and we start having one-on-one meetings where possible, where the department feels comfortable with it. So I agree.
Yep, I'm good with that. Mark, is that straightforward enough for you?
Thank you, commissioners. That's very helpful. And that's the approach that we'll use as a premise. If I could, let me ask this question as well, and I don't mean to put you on the spot by any means, but any feedback you're able to offer will be helpful. Am I correct in the assumption that, at least at this point, that we do not believe that we would probably see the courthouse facility open to the general public, not even via appointment, but just open to the general public anytime probably in the month of May?
I don't necessarily know the answer to that, but I'm fine with us at least proceeding with that for now. And if we decide that we want to reopen it earlier, then we could. But I think maybe we should just give that like plan on being closed for May. I see Tim and Doug giving a thumbs up on that too. So,
Yeah, and I think to the extent that we continue to talk in terms of remaining in harmony with the governor's orders, or at least the governor, the intent of the governor's orders, and I think it's pretty clear that the governor's intent is that not much is changing here for the next 30 days. So I'm happy to go along those lines.
Great. That's very helpful feedback, commissioners. With that in mind, that'll give us a good starting point in terms of putting the outline together and making sure we come back to you with a lot more detail. And this is a very helpful. Thank you very much.
All right.
I had one more question, Tim. So
please go.
So yeah, Mark was, so we have an interesting species out there, the airport. So I don't know. And so hopefully you can work with Kevin to figure out how that all works too, because we still have those people coming. Well, even with the reduced airline schedule and the airline numbers and the rest. In fact, we all heard this morning from Kevin that the airlines are now distancing themselves in the seating arrangement on the planes as well. So, which is good. So I don't know. So we get thermometers when they get off the plane now. So or something like that too.
Well, I might be willing to consider flying again if that's the way things are at, you know?
It's probably worth something at the airport, but the reality is it's what, like one or two flights a day from now until I don't know when. I mean, it's such the slow season anyway. It's right. We probably have some time out there, I guess, is my point.
Doug, thanks. I can assure you that following Ray, that Kevin is right at the top of the list in terms of being on the transitional team. You bet, because there's going to be some unique characteristics out there that we certainly want to bear in mind as we put this together. Absolutely.
Well, we want to protect our employees too. That's a big thing we all want to do. So, yeah. Thank you.
All right. Are we ready to move on to our next item?
I'm sorry. Since Mark was talking about the budget timeline, you guys know this is my favorite topic. I just wanted to, if you guys don't mind, give a little background to Mark on this. And you guys can feel free to weigh in. I know we're not all 100% on the same page. But in short, Mark, my sense has been that the budget process is really drawn out, and there's a lot of kind of unnecessary work built into it, where there's a lot of like, put it in this spreadsheet and then copy it to this spreadsheet and then put it over here in this other spreadsheet. And so I've been pushing us to make that process a little more efficient. And there was a revised timeline that was developed, but at the same time, personally, if we are still planning to move to doing the budget in Munis in a year, so not this year, but a year from now, I'm not as dead set on revising the process now. I think it could just wait and be done in conjunction with that software piece, and we could kind of just stumble through as normal until we get there. So that's just sort of some background and where I'm at this point. I don't know if Tim and Doug have additional thoughts.
Well, I would guess that given everything that's gone on, the budget process is going to be shrinking itself to a certain degree, and as folks have really hardly gotten started on it yet. And yeah, I agree that everything we do this year is probably going to be classified as muddling through.
Good.
So yeah, I'd say that hopefully we'll be able to do the budget, and you, I'm sympathetic to your cause, Beth, and we just, and you know, I think making Mark aware that we want to continue to simplify the process and yet allow the process to make sure informs the commissioners and the decision-making items and allows us to have that good conversation about the decision-making items and to weigh in on it, and to weigh the some of the more refined things as well as the over the high the top end of part of the budget as well. So I'm good. So hopefully by then we'll have by next year and 2022's budget, we'll have the Munis thing up and hopefully having it help us. So.
Yeah, and I guess my point is let's not reinvent the process twice. If we know we're going to kind of reinvent the process when we move to using the Munis budget module, let's not put our staff through the pain of trying to redo the process multiple times.
Yeah. Commissioners, good feedback. And believe me, I'm all about good, simple, straightforward, efficient budget documents. And I'm probably the canary in the mine shaft because as I get more and more familiar with your budget, if I feel like things are confusing and things are not clear, then I'm not bashful about making sure that we wind up with a much more readable and understandable and much more efficient budget going forward. So that's good advice, and that will be a good guidepost for us.
Great. Is there anything else you guys need to talk about before we move on to
We still have a couple minutes. Well, we have a couple minutes anyhow. So we have, and the county manager time is usually when we can kind of have some conversation about some consensus things that we might want to. So we had the Facebook of the meeting today. A question from Deanna, did anybody respond to her? I'm all right with us Facebooking the public health part of the meeting if we want to do that. I don't.
That sounds great.
But other than that, I don't need to Facebook the whole meeting. People hope they have, even with COVID-19, they still have a life out there and something to do other than watch us. Anyhow, so that was one point I had to ask about. So if somebody wanted to send, Kendra, if you wanted to tell her that, do we think that's a good idea then? I guess to Facebook the public health part.
I think people want to know what we're doing with the Board of Health and an opportunity to see that. So I think that's good.
Right. And just so you know, commissioners, what happens is, yes, people have a life, but when we do the live sessions, we're able to keep it on the Facebook. So like, for example, is that our last session on Friday is over 1,000 hits that people watch it afterwards. So they may not be able to watch it live, but it's recorded and then it's on our Facebook page and people can listen to it whenever they want. So it's just an opportunity. Just what's helpful for me because I'll write a press release, is for you to make comments, not just the details of what the public health order should look like, but why you're doing what you're doing, because then I can put that in the press release and it helps, you know, when you're talking, just talk as if people are listening.
People listen to us?
Yes.
So my other question was, we got that email from Melissa Baumgartner asking about whether we wanted to donate to the seniors to the banner, and I think we got enough causes going on right now that, you know, with the budget cuts and everything else that we're doing right now, I'm very sympathetic to the seniors and the rest too, but I think we need to hold off on that. So be my comment.
Yeah, I don't even really know who she is. I don't know if it was a formal request or just a suggestion. I feel like we get those all the time. I mean, if there was an actual request, I'd be more inclined to consider it. But people thinking about causes that they think would be nice for us to donate to, I'm not super inclined on those things.
Yeah, I think if we were going to think about allotting money to certain things in light of the crisis, And I agree with Doug that it's not like we've got any money to a lot to speak of, but if we were going to, it would be more along the lines of business support, which is what a lot of other community counties, well, not a lot, some other counties and towns, if you saw that email from Randy Rudasix earlier today, talking about different resources that were available. I think that's going to be the great challenge for Route County and Steamboat is to is what it's going to take to bring the business community back to life before we worry about every little feel good kind of an event that we might be asked to donate to.
So somebody want to respond to her? I guess Beth, she sent that to you. So she used to work for us at the Sheriff's Department. So
okay, I can email her. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. That'd be good. That's all I had. Thank you.
I don't have anything else in particular before we move on to legal. Beth. All right. Legal, you're up. I see Linnea there, and maybe Eric is lurking behind one of those phone numbers.
I'm here.
Great. Before you start, Eric, is there any reason, is there any part of what you're doing today that might require us or to go into executive session?
No, sir.
Great, perfect. I'll put away my script. What have you got for us?
I don't have any legal updates. Obviously, today we've got the COVID updates and the Board of Health meeting. But other than that, I don't have anything unless you have questions or comments.
So I have a question, and I think you probably saw my email regarding this 10-mile travel limitation for recreational purposes. I guess maybe my question is, one to you, how complicated would it be for us to go through the process of asking for an exception? And two, what is the feeling of my fellow commissioners about looking for an exemption for that purpose or any other purposes that they may have in mind?
Well, I can only answer the first part of that. I frankly don't know how complicated it would be. Obviously, we have Eagle County maybe as a resource, but this one would be more limited. This type of exception would be more limited than what Eagle County sought.
Well, Eric, while I've still got you addressing that issue, and I spent some time looking at Eagle County's public health order, and I kind of share a sense of confusion with Beth about just what was it that they got exempted from, especially in light of the governor's new order. It's very hard for me to see what they're allowing that the governor's order would not allow.
I tried asking that question to the Eagle County attorney. I haven't heard back from him yet. I did see a comment basically that Eagle County residents were allowed to participate in other activities that non-residents were not, for example, recreation.
But again, that was a provision that's actually more restrictive than the governor's order.
So, Tim, I know the executive order said that, but I don't know if you're watching your email while we're here. Scott forwarded us the actual public health order, and the language in the public health order is somewhat different than the executive order. So I would say before we even start talking about the possibility of requesting exceptions, et cetera, we should thoroughly review the actual public health order and determine if anything we would actually want that's different than what's in the Safer at Home order. So I think it's a little premature to have the conversation, I guess. So specifically to the 10-mile piece, here's what it actually says in the public health order. travel for recreational purposes should be limited. So first of all, should be limited to your own community, like your county of residence, or traveling no more than about 10 miles. So I guess, again, just, I don't think we should have any discussion about requesting exceptions until we actually know what the details of the Safer at Home order are.
I couldn't agree with you more. There's always value in reading the actual document rather than jumping to conclusions. I confess I took the governor's executive order at face value, which was probably a mistake on my part.
And then I guess I would also note that I do know the state exception process requires the sign off from the public health director, as well as the BCC, as well as any hospitals in the jurisdiction. So I'm being really careful about this because I know that we have community members who want us to seek some kind of exception just to be able to say that we're opening things up. And I think we should proceed in the same manner we have been, which is, what's the data? What's the reason? What's the recommendation of public health? And we should just be really careful about being intentional in the same way we have been.
Well, I would agree with all of what you just said, Beth. And again, I would like, Mesa County evidently got approved by the governor for some exceptions as well. But I don't really care about that, and I don't care, you know, and I think we need to figure out, is this exactly what you said, of what the kind of things that we want to have accepted, and then figure out how we're, you know, and again, it goes back to this transition committee as well, and or whether each of these types of businesses can pool their resources and work together through the ESF, or whether they're through the transition or the policy team, to come up with some, you know, mitigation that those businesses can individually provide on behalf of those types of businesses. So, and I think everybody's trying to do that. I mean, it looks like all the counties are kind of doing that, but I mean, if Mesa County was sent in some exception request, and I saw on Facebook last night that they were granted their exception, I'm trying to figure out what that exception was, and as you said, so too. Thanks.
Yeah, I think we have some friends in other counties who feel the need to make a political statement by requesting an exception, and that's fine. That they can do that. I would prefer that we. It seems odd to me to request an exception before the order was actually issued, until you know what you're seeking an exception from. And if there are additional businesses, that is that obvious, Tim?
That was exactly what I was going to say. Thank you so much, Beth, for stating the obvious.
Well, and I think that, if we believe that there are some, we are hearing from some community members, hey, we want you to open things up. But I want to know exactly what needs to be opened up? Who is still at home and A, not getting paid more to be on unemployment than to work, right? And, you know, really losing money and being impacted economically, that it has to be specifics, not just this concept of opening up, in my mind.
I totally agree. Again, that the idea of considering doing something different, I was focused on that 10-mile travel restriction, and I had made the assumption that the public health order that was going to be issued would mirror what was in the executive order, but apparently that's not the case. And once again, we can save this discussion till tomorrow after we've all had an opportunity to thoroughly read the new public health order, which is frustrating that we just now get this at 11 o'clock in the morning of the day of the morning that the order takes place, but that's fine.
Well, don't worry. It went into effect at 6 a.m. today before it was issued. So
I'm pretty sure I didn't violate anything in the intervening 5 hours. So I'm good.
So I don't have anything else from legal. Looks like Robert may be on the line for the next item, and then we have more COVID discussion after that, according to the agenda.
That sounds good, unless you guys have any other questions for Eric at this time. Okay, Robert, you are on. Unmute thyself.
I am here.
Great. Talk to us.
Okay, so basically I had been attending, at Tom's departure, I had been attending the NCB board meetings. Basically, I've actually attended one board meeting and one special meeting. And this proposal from YVERA to and Luminate Broadband had been significantly down the road already, and some discussions had been taking place. I know there were some legal issues with that, as far as the length of the DOLA grant, and I think everybody's on the table or on board there, where we realize the restrictions the DOLA grant places on us, and not until that expiration date could any of this really, any true ownership be taken over by Illuminate. Basically, the summary of the proposal is that Illuminate would like to take over all, at least all the dark fiber at a minimum that was provided by the NCB. And even take over the extra capacity that some of the agencies and members of the NCB has. So, you know, just being thrown into this short little while ago, it was a little bit concerning to me, because I knew what the spirit of the NCB was, and this seems to be a kind of change in direction on that, of promoting rural broadband and access to our outlying communities. But then the more I dug into it and looked into the numbers and the costs and the reality of us being in the business of broadband, like some other communities have, like EagleNet and that, I do see the benefits of Illuminate's proposal. As long as we can guarantee that our fiber strands are for us and we have expandability and we have some cost controls on our expectations. So, I think it's an opportunity for you guys to share with me on what your vision of the NCB was. And I can answer any questions of things that I've learned since I've been bringing myself up to speed.
I might interject that I don't know a lot about the history of the NCB. And I imagine Mark knows even less than I do. So maybe some kind of broad overview statements from anyone would be helpful as well.
Well, I guess I'll take a crack at that, Beth, which is when we got the grant from DOLA in partnership with the other entities to put in the fiber backbone through downtown Steamboat, it became apparent that there needed to be an independent organization that would manage that asset over time. And I think that was the, and Doug can correct me if I'm wrong on that, that was kind of the foundational reason that Northwest Colorado Broadband was brought into being, was to coordinate the efforts of those multiple entities to finish the project, which was a Rauch County project, basically, because we were the ones that received the grant. But then Northwest Colorado Broadband was the entity that collected money from the other entities in order to finish that project. And then as they move forward to manage that asset and collect the money from the various entities to pay the various bills, and but not to be in the business of providing to the door broadband access to our citizens. Did I get that about right, Doug?
So no, yeah, you did good. So again, I guess the broader perspective here, back, you know, we were in need of fiber, and Robert would say, hell, we were going to spend as much money to get the fiber from the from the downtown campus over to the sheriff and the Justice Center building. We're going to spend as much money as what we ended up contributing to the whole of having the NCB become an entity. And then also then we ended up having, you know, getting the $50,000 grant from DOLA, and then that had to go to a local government. So in essence then, so everybody was kind of in need of having their own infrastructure, as well as YVEA and the city and all of these things. So we ended up creating the NCB. Originally, and correct me if I'm wrong, Robert, but we ended up having NCB had a contract with Mammoth or somebody to do the maintenance on that thing. And that was actually just a cost recovery with whoever that entity was. That so we basically paid our dues to the NCB, which had the contract with whoever it was to keep the system in order. And
so right now,
and again, back to a couple more comments, and then I'll turn it over to you, Robert. So yeah, we were all totally working about the middle mile. We weren't interested in talking about the last mile and the. And again, we weren't operators of the system. We were contracting out. So, Robert, go ahead.
So, yeah, we do pay. Mammoth is our operator, and they operate the CNL as well as we paid them. Basically, the NCB contracted with them for $90,000 annually. $30,000 of that was for them to kind of go out and market our infrastructure and look for that last mile provider. And 60 was basically ongoing maintenance of the fiber trunk, locates, that kind of thing. So that's kind of where we've got our members now in different places. Rock County we've got our fiber in there in our connectivity, and we have an extra strands for our expansion. I think Steamboat Springs is in the same boat. I think the school district, their opinions is, you know, they would really like to see the NCB continue on and worry about, because, you know, their school district is obviously much bigger, and they're concerned about all their expansion west of town and things like that. And then you have really an elephant in the room, which was the medical center, Yampa Medical, UC Health now. And, you know, they use the NCB's broad bandwidth only for redundancy. So their main contractor is still with CenturyLink, and that's their day-to-day operations. And they use the NCB only as a backup. So they are facing pressure mainly because of our operating fees, is that now that they're members of UC Health, is that from an expense standpoint, CenturyLink is much more competitive than we're currently offering them. So having them leave the NCB would be a significant hit to our operating costs for the remaining members. They're not saying they're leaving, but they just made it clear that that's on the table. Couple of benefits of Luminate's proposal is, one, they kind of take over all those operating costs. The locates, the insurance, if there was a splice, you know what I mean, a cut fiber, that would all fall on Luminate. So my opinion is that I'm leaning towards, I'm growing warmer and warmer to their to Luminate's proposal, and we're going to have some more meetings with Luminate and kind of what would make us feel comfortable in transferring after the DOLA grant expires, on transferring ownership of the fiber trunk to Luminate.
I have two questions, Robert.
Sure.
The first question is, in regards of working out an arrangement with YVEA, mm-hmm. Are we being fair to any other entity that might want to offer a similar service or take over that ownership? And then my second question is, what guarantees do we have now, and what guarantees would we have in the future regarding what we pay for broadband?
We have no guarantees right now what we pay. And I've been looking through the bills and the invoices and call for capital, or what I call for operating expenses. It's just really non-consistent. So,
but we are NCB and Rouse County are relying upon the buying power that we jointly have as a group, as opposed to the buying power we would have as one individual entity.
Correct. And that's where our cost controls come. And that's where I think not disbanding the NCB is a benefit to the community and to Northwest Colorado, basically for grants, bulk purchases, and also becoming members of the Thor Project has actually kind of increased our presence, you know, our buying power.
You want to address the fairness issue of dealing with YVEA?
I don't know the fairness issue there. It seems odd to me that over this time, we've only one last, what I want to call last mile operator, make a proposal to us. And that was one of the members themselves, in my opinion, right? So we've had no.
Robert, your computer muted itself. I don't know what happened.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Start over again, Robert, with your fairness.
Sure. So,
it's usually my wife that mutes me. So,
I struggle with the fairness of that because the initial purpose was to offer this, you know, some of our fiber trunks to the last mile. And during the course of this, the grant so far in the NCB's existence, we haven't had any last mile providers come up and pursue this. And we were actually paying Mammoth $30,000 a year to be one of the, to actually promote our infrastructure and look for that last mile provider. And that really never came. How we feel about Luminate, which is actually a fully owned subsidiary of Yampa Valley Electric, being the only last mile provider that actually has made a proposal to us, and Yampa Valley Electric being a NCB member. So yeah, it's cloudy.
So for clarity, did we put out kind of an RFP, or they just came forward with this? I mean, has anyone else been given the opportunity to do this?
They came forward with this, and we've always been open. The NCB had always been open to a last mile provider come and approach us. The reality of it is that it all comes down to dollars and trying to get, let's say, Stagecoach or some other rural areas. It's difficult, and the pricing model just doesn't work unless we were to really jump in with 2 feet and start subsidizing.
So is there any way we can do something with the contract then that would allow us to they are a cooperative, and they are a local cooperative, and I appreciate that. And at the same point in time, personally, we've been on some at the Upper Yap and negotiating deals, and sometimes aren't quite all as good as you'd think too. So, but if there was an opportunity, you know, that to leave it open, that they weren't the only provider of last mile, that they would continue to allow other entities to come in and make proposals for last mile, I would hope that we would want to have that happen.
I mean, we proposed that, and Yampa Valley Electric's or Illuminate's response to that is, you know, there's some concern about over allocation already of the bandwidth. So what they need from, what they see from NCB providing and our infrastructure is a guarantee that that capacity will be there for them if and when they need it and when they have this build out. If we were to over allocate some of that bandwidth, then it might not be there when they need it. And they're taking on the risk of operating the infrastructure in the meantime.
Robert, do you happen to know who NCB uses for legal advice?
I think her name's Linnea South. No. I do not know.
You know, that my guess is that Northwest Colorado Broadband has been a pretty well-run organization that has done things by the book and have proceeded in a legal and ethical way. And my guess is that they're continuing to do that, but it would be it would just be nice to get some reassurance from the NCB board that in fact they have pursued the proper path to get to this point where they're negotiating directly with YVEA and Luminant.
Okay.
Well, speaking of Linnea and Eric, and you know, and our talk about our DOLA grant, we had a 20-year obligation on that DOLA grant too, and we kind of have to make sure that we're, you know, that's probably a soft guarantee, whatever that might be, but we did have some type of guarantee of that thing would continue on for part of, I mean, for that grant portion of that money that we had there.
Hey, Doug, the grant requires the county to own the infrastructure for 10 years.
So are we out? We're not quite out of that, are we?
No, but I don't think that this proposal is actually talking about transferring ownership of the asset. It's an IRU, an indefeasible right of use, which is not the same as an ownership transfer.
But they would like the ownership transfer at the end of the IRU. And the, you know, after the 10 years is up with the DOLA grant, they would like the transfer of that.
So, Robert, I think that the task in front of you right at the moment as our representative to the NCB is to try to get some kind of assurance that the process that's being followed for the IRU to go to Luminant and YVEA is in fact a fair process, and other entities have at least had the same opportunity that YVEA has had to make this proposal.
Okay.
And my guess is that the answer to that question is yes, that is the process that has taken place. But it would just be nice to receive that assurance.
Okay.
So, Robert, so at the end of the day, if this IRU goes through, Rauch County would maintain indefinitely a certain number of strands connecting the courthouse to the justice facility and then the sheriff's department. We would never transfer the ownership of those strands.
That is still in negotiation. Maybe we had the IRU back, but that is one topic that still needs to be kind of be ironed out.
And then as far as ongoing pricing goes, we're still subject to market fluctuations and the extent to which we have buying power in conjunction with our partners.
Correct. One thing to point out though is that for this to happen, I would like to see the expenses of Mammoth kind of be transferred to Luminate, and they would be the operator, and they would eat those expenses would be covered as part of this offer. So right now that's the 90,000. I think in the fall, our contract's up for renegotiation. And the initial proposal was that they dropped it to 60, but I would like to see all those funds, all those expenses be transferred to Luminate.
What is the timing for this agreement to be completed?
Probably the fall.
Okay.
Kind of in conjunction with our operators agreement with Mammoth.
Who is the current president of the NCB? Tom was for a long time.
Yeah, we don't really have one. We haven't nominated one yet.
Yeah, that seems a little bit problematic. I'm sure that NCB has its own set of bylaws that it needs to comply with.
I have not seen the bylaws, and it is, that's when I first jumped into this, it is a little concerning, is that you have Steve, who is the representative for Yampa Valley Electric and a board member, wearing two hats, also representing Illuminate.
I had thought I saw that Kara Stoller was the president right now, based on some emails that I saw go through. And I can send you the bylaws, Robert.
Okay, thank you.
So with all this process, can NCB go away then? That sounds like maybe an optimal thing too. I mean, Robert, it's like, I see you smiling and thinking, but anyhow, so I mean, if it's not serving a purpose for us to keep filing paperwork so that we can file paperwork and, you know, so I'm just asking.
I mean, the NCB definitely has to exist for the life of the DOLA grant for the 10 years of ownership. But there is benefit in the NCB just as a consortium for grants, you know, any other broadband initiatives that we may undertake in the Valley or in Northwest Colorado, and pooling our resources together with those other entities.
Robert, when's the next meeting of the NCB?
I believe in 3 weeks. I'll have to look that up, though.
You know, I'm thinking there might be some benefit from either Mark or one of the commissioners attending that meeting to have a better understanding of what's going on. I'm sure you do a fine job, but it feels like that there may possibly be some bigger picture political issues that need to be considered as this moves forward.
That'd be great. And that's kind of why I think I reached out to you after my first meeting and just trying to get some background on your overall direction and impression, where the NCB was going and actually where it is going. So that would be beneficial.
Why don't you send that invite to Mark, and maybe next week Mark and the commissioners can have a conversation about who might be best suited to attend that meeting.
Great.
Any other questions for Robert on NCB? Robert, thank you very much. We appreciate you stepping into the void, as it were.
IT questions that I have one question for you guys, and I don't know if this is appropriate, but do you have any IT questions while I have you on, while we're together?
No, I just to pass along a compliment. Once again, my Surface was encountering a number of difficulties, and Willie Iaconelli fixed it quite rapidly for me. And it was kind of handy that he's working from home here in Yampa, and I was able to deliver it to him. But you guys, your help desk, from my perspective, continues to do a really great job. And I think it's been crucial to keeping the county up and running. Have you experienced any significant problems that you're concerned about?
My only problem is not necessarily is the long-term solution with the remote workforce. And if we're really dealing with a 50% or even 25% workforce that's going to be working remotely going forward, we kind of need to plan accordingly from a management standpoint, work plan standpoint, that kind of thing. And I think the cat's out of the bag a little bit, and that's what we're going to be facing.
We the cat is out of the bag there, Robert, and for sure. So, and you know, the commissioners and all of us, we have some, you know, America has some thinking about to do all that stuff too, because working at home and the rest, and then, you know, the legal and the employment part of it as well, and our employees and whole concept.
I agree. It's a big deal. It's going to be very interesting over the next several months to hear from our various department directors how effectively this is or is not working. Certainly, when I think about human services, I mean, we all know that the idea that we're going to be building a new human services building within the next year or so seems a little unlikely in the face of economic realities. And who knows, maybe the actual needs for that building, our perception of those needs may change during this crisis.
I've been thinking about it too, because as we talk about the idea of climate action and what activities can take place, you know, allowing some of your workforce to work remotely for a percentage of the time definitely reduces the need to drive. It's interesting. It's an interesting opportunity to learn some new things.
Well, it's not just the driving, it's the heating and cooling of buildings as well, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to think of this crisis as an opportunity right now, but I suppose we need to keep our minds open to opportunities.
Right. We can double our workforce with the same our workforce with the same building footprint.
Yeah.
We'll just have more computer footprint, but less, maybe the same building footprint could double the work.
By the way, Robert, I know that you were running out of laptops to issue. Yep. And you were going to try to accelerate the purchase of some new ones. What's the status of that?
We are still trying to find laptops that meet our specifications that are actually in the pipeline. Well, that's good that you brought that up, because we are actively pursuing that. I just want to make sure that we're all on board that we were going to pull forward the 2021 PC replacements with laptops. So that doesn't come as a surprise down the road.
So do we have employees that are not able to work at home because they don't have laptops?
No. The majority of us, the last few ones that we had, we've deployed their desktops at home, which makes them less mobile, but they're the ones that are definitely either in a high risk group or have childcare issues that we're going to be working from home for a significant period. We've actually reconfigured their desktop and allowed them to take that home.
Thanks for accommodating people that way. That's great. I didn't know that. So the assessor's office issue was resolved then?
They are resolved. They are still rotating in, but a couple of their employees did take their desktops home to accommodate that.
Great.
So they all can come to work on the same day. That's what IT is going to request. They come back and wave, so they all show back up in the office with 150 people here at the door saying we're ready to work.
Well, Mark's working on the transition plan, so he'll have to note that as well. I do have, this is sort of a random question, but maybe Robert, you know something about this. I'm just thinking about environmental impacts and carbon footprint. The other thing, though, that I've read is like servers, like Google's servers, for example. I mean, the amount of electricity they require, they have a huge carbon footprint just doing things virtually. And so I guess I don't know how that compares to driving all the time. I mean, it obviously the impact is in a different place because it's wherever Zoom's server is or wherever Google's server is. But I just don't know if you know anything about that.
Not much. I know that basically we've transferred a lot of our power usage to the homeowner, to the employee, for all the desktops and things like that. So that brings up another point in when we're thinking about this remote workforce, is cell phone availability and costs, as well as internet costs. I've already had it brought up to me without, I didn't have an answer for them, but basically saying it's their responsibility for their internet connection.
I have one more question for you, Robert. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that in the proposed 2020 budget savings, it included you deferring a number of capital items and servers. Is that accurate?
That's correct. And those were the only the servers and the capital replacements that I could get a HP care pack on. And that basically is an extended warranty for another year. We do not run any equipment without it being under a warranty. So when I offered those up, we were assured that we could extend our HP care pack on those servers.
But these are, just like almost any of our deferrals on capital items. This is something we're going to have to deal with next year, since we're not buying them this year.
Correct. We're just kicking the can down the road a little bit there, with the assurances that with the warranty or the support, but they will need to be replaced.
But you don't view this as a threatening to our critical infrastructure, this 1 year delay?
No, and there were a few things that I chose not to add, and basically our firewall that was up for replacement, and that needs to be replaced.
I guess while we still have time, I complimented your help desk team and the guys that are able to keep up with all this stuff. They've been able to function efficiently from home?
Yeah, for sure, especially in the support model. You know, I'm rotating in my SAs in because, you know, I would say if anybody's struggling, it's me, because I'm a big collaborator and I'm in their space all the time. And for me not to be able to be in their space all the time is annoying, having to call them on the phone and things like that. So I'm adjusting. But, you know, I like to bounce ideas off them and kind of, you know, keep a pulse on where we're going. And that's challenging in this environment.
Great. Any more? Well,
as we move forward in this whole discussion about remote working and the rest, it will have a whole different transition of the department heads as well. Just like you said, Robert, I mean, so being able to, you know, having those relationships with your employees as well, it is going to be interesting as it moves forward.
Right.
I don't know. It might be better, Doug. Maybe less interaction is better.
I know some of my employees certainly feel that I'm not interrupting them all day long.
Great. Do you guys have anything else for Robert? Robert, thank you very much for the update. That's been really helpful. We appreciate it. All right. We have about 20 minutes before our public health meeting. Do you guys want to adjourn until then, or do you have other things that you feel like we need to discuss in the interim?
We do have our COVID-19 work session on the agenda, so that would just be if we do have any additional things before Board of Health, I mean. But I don't actually. Well, a couple things. I just wanted to, the Board of Health agenda, I think we're going to be talking about the public health order, but are we also thinking that we'll have time to have Carrie review the contact tracing plan with us, that PowerPoint she sent us last week? Go ahead, Deanna, you're fine.
I had talked to Carrie last week about that, and I asked her if she'd like to separate her time for that, or if she thought she would have enough time today. And she did say she would like to talk about it today.
Okay.
So I believe she is prepared.
I'm looking forward to having that conversation. That sounds good.
Beth, I'm sure I can dig it up, but one of us ought to be prepared to put it up on the screen.
Yeah, and it might be best if Deanna posts it in the agenda too, if we're going to talk through it. But yeah, I can re-forward it. I think I know exactly where it is.
Yeah, if you could forward that to me, that would be great, and I can post on the agenda for you guys.
No problem.
And then be prepared to share your screen, Deanna, so that we can all be looking at the same document at the
sure.
When Carrie is discussing it.
Can do.
Yeah, this situation of finding an email, it's just like, well, you know, we first started COVID. I started a COVID file, and then I had three different COVID files. And hell, now those COVID files, there's so damn many of those things in there, I couldn't find anything in there if I needed to. It's just like, really.
Well, plus a lot of it's become irrelevant over time, too, as things change. So.
Well, and always be good at going through my emails and getting rid of stuff I don't need so that I can find things. And holy smokes, can I not keep up with
it? Yeah.
Well, you're talking about you could get rid of it as things change. Well, that's the next day. You just thought of it. You know, so now we have 6 months. Robert's got the 6 month thing. So I think it is delete and everything after. Isn't that right? 6 months or something like that? Or maybe it's a year. But anyhow, maybe we ought to just up that to like 3 minutes because it's all irrelevant, you know.
So while we're talking about COVID-19 and travel restrictions, I wonder if, and again, we need to thoroughly read the actual public health order, but there was that question that I posed about, well, this is great. The governor is going to be imposing these travel restrictions upon Coloradans. What does that mean for somebody from out of state? Nobody's got an answer to that, do they? It just feels kind of strange that we would tell residents of Colorado that they are restricted in where they can travel for recreational purposes, but we probably don't have the legal authority to tell residents of other states where they can travel within our state.
I think that's totally true. I mean, counties have said that people who don't live in the county can't come there. I don't know why the state couldn't say the same thing.
Well, that'll be another interesting thing to flesh out.
Well, I would also just read the actual details of the public health order.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
The top line doesn't
great idea.
Give you enough information. I mean, it says individuals. It doesn't say residents of Colorado, so I don't know exactly how it applies.
The governor's executive order was specific to Coloradans.
Yeah, I have no idea, and I don't really understand how the executive order basically just directed Jill to create the public health order. The public health order is what actually has the rules, I believe.
Well, if we recess now, or we got 15 minutes, I guess it's almost so
they raise your hand and sit there. You should say something.
Okay, I'm just trying to be polite, so my mother would be proud of me. So two things.
You gotta elbow your way in with these guys, Raman.
Just so you know, because it was our Q&A session with you was so successful on Friday, Commissioner Melton and I were talking about this over the weekend. We are replicating that with department heads this week for certain industries. So I just wanted to let you know. So we're going to do a construction Q&A with Todd Carr and probably somebody from the city on Thursday. And any of you are welcome to join any of these. I'll send you the info. So Thursday is construction, and on Wednesday we're doing retail stores and personal services. We may do more next week, but we thought we'd start with those three, and we'll have Scott Komen, Steamboat Chamber, and Main Street Steamboat, and then myself. I'll probably moderate again. So I just wanted to let you know on that. And then I sent you this morning those commitments of containment, those five areas that Eagle County and some other counties have done. So during your Board of Health meeting, if you like that idea, that's not necessarily a public health order, it's more personal responsibility. But if one of you or all of you say that you like that, then I would love to be able to put that in the press release that it's something that you're urging all community members to do to keep our community safe. Because my hope was we talked about with Main Street and the Chamber that we would try to do a graphic like some other counties have done, even though we don't have graphic design in the county, but I'm hoping that within the Chamber they may be able to help us, that that stores could put that in the window as well. So just something that just wanted to let you guys know.
Well, I liked the idea of, actually it was something I had kind of thought about before. You know how like YVSC does that, I pledge to fight climate change, and then you like check off the things that you're committing to. I think it's kind of in that concept, and it makes a lot of sense to me. And it wouldn't be a public health order. It would be more of a communications, you know, it'd be more in your realm, Robin. So I think probably you just need support from the commissioners to do that, right?
Yes, that's all.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel like we're asking anything too terribly onerous for folks to agree to that. So, hey Robin, what time are we doing our thing tomorrow?
Town hall. It's at 10:30.
Are we using the same Zoom link that we're
using? I think so. Winnie was just. I'll double check with Winnie and send it out to you. So it's like a 10:10 check-in, and it starts at 10:30.
And Lisa will moderate that.
Yes, ma'am.
And all three of us will be there.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
And I'm trying to see if I can get Dr. Harrington was not available. Jason Lacey will be there as well, and trying to get. I have to reach out to Carrie Ladro to see if she can come because Dr. Harrington can't.
Is there a specific focus for this town hall, or is it just
general? Yeah, public health orders.
Okay.
So for you to explain the safer at home, so you get to read those really carefully from the governor, your interpretation. And then the thought was, if you are revising public health order number 3 today for Route County, that you could explain, you know, why you're doing that and what is the difference between what it was before and what it is now.
In the previous town hall that I went to, we did have law enforcement, and I'm not sure that they need to be a part of this one, but you could bet that's a lot of the questions that are going to be coming up on these public health orders and on the governor's one is, you know, what's the enforcement?
Okay, I'll mention it to Winnie.
Okay, that'd be good. I'm going to take a 5-minute timeout, but just stay hooked up. So I'll see you guys in about 5 minutes. Okay, it is 12 o'clock, and I see that all three commissioners are here. I see Carrie is on the line, Carrie Ladreau, that is. I see we have representation from legal. So we are here today to consider amending our standing public health order 2020-03, requiring a mitigation plan of all businesses. I guess I would ask legal first to present what it is that we are considering here today. Linnea, Eric?
I'll go if you don't mind.
That'd be great, Eric. Thank you.
Linnea is probably as busy as I am responding to emails. This amended standing public health order is before you because of changes to the state order and the previous version or the existing version of our local order and its reliance on state definitions. So it became necessary to amend our order now to remove those state definitions, although we went through all of this and the new Safer at Home order still uses the same terminology, so became less critical as a result of that. I still think it's important to go ahead and consider this amended public health order. I think it's clearer. I think it's well written, and it also covers a few other changes, but the main recommendation for amendment was due to its reliance on the state definitions. Now, instead of having to go to those definitions, everything is encompassed here in the local public health order.
Thank you, Eric. I guess I would ask our public health officials to make any comments they may have on this amended order. Carrie?
Hi, everyone. Yes, I would say I think that this order has positioned us well for the Safer at Home order from the governor. I strongly support this, the mitigation efforts by the businesses, and thank them for those efforts. I think moving forward, this order, if it is determined that it's going to be continued, really allows for transparent information for employees so that they know exactly what is expected, and for customers. We obviously have seen through data that social distancing protocols and mask wearing are supported by evidence, both by the CDC and CDPHE. And so I would encourage the continuation of the order for mitigation efforts by businesses.
Great. Thank you, Carrie. Commissioners, any comments or questions?
Tim, it does look like Dr. Harrington's on the line. I don't know if you want to have him comment before turning to the commissioners or not.
Oh, there he is. Good morning, Brian. Would you like to weigh in on this?
Well, technically speaking, good afternoon, everybody. I guess.
Oh, okay.
Hey, no, the governor's order, Carrie and I have tried to walk through. We don't necessarily see anything that's not consistent with our existing order in terms of expectations on businesses and activities for social distancing and all the other things. So it fits by me.
Carrie and Dr. Harrington, have you guys actually seen the actual public health order that was issued at the behest of the governor's executive order? We just saw it here about an hour ago.
Oh, I have not seen anything in the past hour. We've got a working draft from last night, but I haven't seen anything in the past hour. We did just get off another public health board call with Moffitt here during this last half hour. So, we haven't seen anything in the past hour.
Well, I'm sure you'll get around to reading it. I've had the opportunity to skim it. And in fact, there are some things that are different in the CDPHE order from the governor's executive order. Not huge differences, but there are some differences.
What did you notice?
in particular, travel regulation uses the word should instead of shall, and seems to be a bit more flexible than what I would have anticipated coming out of the governor's executive order. The travel for recreational purposes in particular.
Well, I think that's a topic of discussion for us today, especially because we also, I know we referenced the Eagle County orders that they put out here last week, and they have a whole section about travel too.
Yeah, I don't think we've had time to digest this yet, and obviously you haven't. I don't know that it's actually a subject for discussion today until we fully understand what the actual order says.
Tim, if I might, I think we should talk about travel, but travel is not addressed in our third public health order, so perhaps we should just stick to that discussion for right now and then discuss travel separately. And if you're ready for comments from the commissioners, I do have a couple of kind of questions/comments.
Yes, I am. Okay. Please.
So I'm fully supportive of this, of us doing this. And I think what Carrie said is exactly right. This provides something really concrete for our businesses, both for employees and customers, to know exactly what a business is doing in order to provide mitigation. I guess my question is, there are a couple of things that the guidance that is in the public health order is going to be a little bit different than what's in here. In particular, the public health order seems to say, again, without having had a thorough review, but seems to say that employers have to track employees' symptoms. And we had removed that from ours when we issued it originally. But I guess I'm wondering, and maybe legal can weigh in on this, whether it makes sense to issue this and there's a way to just reference the state guidance and say, because I don't imagine we're going to amend this to include every single line of the state guidance, but maybe the additional measures section or something like that could say, you know, where the state guidance is more restrictive, it prevails, and then they have to list at the bottom what measures they're taking that maybe are in addition and are included in the state guidance. Or if we would rather fully review the state guidance and amend this again, and I don't know which would be preferable, but we're not going to be able to do something that's less restrictive than what the state is requiring without seeking an exemption. So I guess maybe that's a question for Linnea and Eric. Do you have a thought on which approach might be preferable?
I'm not sure I agree that we would be required to file for an exemption. Now, if you're suggesting that Route County government as a governmental entity would need an exemption to not track the employee information, then yeah, I agree that would be required, but that's not my understanding. I think what you're saying is that if the local public health order is less stringent than the state public health order, we may not be able to do that without an exemption. I would proffer that we can be less stringent, but the state order is still applicable, and that much is still clear in the local public health order. It states specifically that the more stringent requirements apply.
So, yeah.
We're not seeking.
Sorry, Eric, go ahead.
I'm sorry. So we're not seeking an exemption. We're still telling our locals that whichever one is more stringent has to be followed.
So I agree with everything you just said, and I guess that last point is exactly my point. If part of what we're trying to accomplish here is having some consistency and clarity and something concrete for our businesses to do. I'd hate for this to have a list of requirements, but then, oh, by the way, you also have to refer to this other list of requirements and try to figure out what you're supposed to do. And so I don't know what the best way to handle that is. And I guess my suggestion, this would be what I would think we would want to do is, you know, at the bottom, there's a place where they can list additional measures. I'm sorry, at the bottom of the mitigation form itself. And I'm just wondering if maybe that should just reference the state guidelines, because I don't think we're going to revise this whole thing to include every possible industry and every possible thing that the state guidelines are recommending. But I would think, again, if this is to provide consistent information to both customers, employees, customers and employees, that at the bottom, maybe they need to list the additional measures, including those that are required by the state for their industry.
I see. Yeah. Okay. I guess I don't have a legal issue or a response to that. I think it would be helpful, but going through the state's orders as it is amended and changed from time to time, or new orders are issued, it becomes more and more problematic.
I guess I would maybe suggest, and I would want everyone else to weigh in on this, but that we maybe just on the mitigation form itself, where it says additional measures, we could literally just put in parentheses, including those required by state guidelines, just to give people an indication of what kinds of things they should put there. And then we won't have to go back and revise all of this. It would just be, they have to reference the state guidance and then they need to list anything else that they are doing. Again, to provide transparency and consistency for businesses, or sorry, for employees and for customers.
Well, I think what, if nothing else, we've once again been able to identify how difficult the state has made our work by putting out these executive order and then the public health order literally after the fact, which leaves us in a position to struggle. And I think whatever we do today with this particular public health order will be imperfect and require some interpretation and explanation over time. So I guess the question in front of us is, do we want to try to do that explanation and interpretation here within our public health order and the mitigation protocol, or if we just want to leave it up to a communication effort?
Well, I think we want to leave it to the communication effort. I guess I've been a little bit surprised. I've been reading some of the other public health orders out of some of the other counties, and you know, we've been pretty reserved into using our discretionary power. I think that we've had and given. I think we've been pretty reserved in doing that. And I just wonder, and I'm a little intrigued about some of the health or other health orders. And you know, and their policing and their the legal background on some of that stuff as well. And I mean, we get counseled by our legal, you know, about our potential for overzealous use of our regulatory authority as well. So, I mean, I've read a couple of these orders, and I'm just going, wow, okay. I'm glad we're not having to go there anyhow. So I don't know exactly at this point in time, since I haven't read the new public health order, the actual order. I've been through the executive order, but without reading the public health order, I think for today, for our purposes right now, I think the amendment that we have to public health order number 2020 number 3 is the right place that we need to move to right now.
I'm fine with all of that. And we can, I think, just note, as far as communication efforts are concerned, that there is, people are going to need to follow the state guidelines where they are more restrictive. I mean, and I guess until we have an opportunity to review everything, we're not going to know whether we want to make amendments to this. And I think trying to do that on the, you know, without having the advantage of having read the full public health order yet, the state order, it's probably best that we stick with just the amendments we were thinking of for today, and then consider whether additional amendments make sense once we've had the opportunity to review the state guidance.
And I think it should be clear enough, and I'll just go ahead and make this statement that I've made before, which is, it is the intent of Rauch County to remain in harmony with the state order, with the only exceptions that I'm currently aware of where we are more restrictive, which is in terms of our shutdown of short-term lodging and the actual requirement that customers wear face masks when going into a place of business.
I'd agree with that. And I think previously we were more restrictive than the state because we were requiring these mitigation protocols for all the businesses that were open. But I believe now under Safer at Home, we're actually, the state is requiring that. And so again, I think our purpose is around providing some consistency so that people can see a form that they recognize at the door of every business, and employees and customers can know that safety protocols are in place and what those are.
Dr. Harrington, you looked like you wanted to make a comment.
Yeah, I'm just looking at something here. Let me scroll to it. So an example of one area where we would have to maybe consider a difference. So Part B, so under the public health order, Safer at Home, Part B, it says individuals are urged to wear non-medical cloth face coverings that cover the nose and mouth whenever in public. As long as ours stays in place, that's fine. Ours makes it, I think, more of a should than an urge. Our local county one does.
I think it, how you're talking about, is there a distinction, Dr. Harrington, you're making between public places and visiting places of business?
Well, no, I'm just realizing where there'll be some, I don't know if I'd say differences, but it's not exactly the same as I'm starting to read through the public health order, like you already suggested. So we will have to probably pick those apart one by one, I guess, or I mean, I'm fine with where we are. It's just we have a stronger imperative for our local residents to use face coverings. And if I am now understanding this, I'm seeing that one line in here says it's individuals are urged, but it's not a should or shall.
So you're right, Dr. Harrington. Our proposed amended order would make it still a requirement in businesses for both employees and customers. And you're right that the state order is permissive in nature. And that's why I think I was very confused, and probably not the only one, why this was called an order sometimes and called guidelines at other times. And urging something is much more like a guideline than an order.
I'd also point out, though, that it varies. If you scroll through that whole thing, some types of businesses, it's required for customers in the state order, and some types, and it's urged. So personal care, it's actually required for all customers. So we have maintained that we saw a significant increase in the use of face masks when it became required. We did previously have a recommendation, and I still believe it's the right thing to do to protect both employees and customers in a business rather than saying only employees need to wear face masks, but customers can come in and breathe on them all they want. And so I guess I'd ask for your opinion on that, Dr. Harrington, but I still see the value in requiring face masks for customers as well.
I'm wondering if, you know, the intent remains very congruent. It's just as this stuff has been pieced together, they may not have caught some of the inconsistencies with it. Maybe we just need to go through it and figure out where we have those kind of questions and then make our own clarifying statements.
So for the purposes of today's activities, let me make a suggestion, which is that we proceed with adopting this amended public health order as presented, knowing full well that A, we're going to have a significant effort in terms of communicating to the public just how these two things work together, and B, recognizing that we may in fact have to amend our public health order yet again, depending upon what we learn in the next couple of days.
So I don't see a problem with the B here myself. It says individuals are, but we have a more restrictive one that any businesses are not urged to, they're required. And then the customers are also required. So I don't see the inconsistency. There's an inconsistency of between our order and theirs, but ours is more restrictive and should be by our Rouse County Board of Health should be the dominant, should be prevalent and dominant. So
I think the issue, Doug, is that if I'm the owner of a particular business, in order to fully understand what I can and cannot do, I really need an order. And I think that's what Commissioner Melton was trying to address in terms of simplification. In a perfect world, we would draft our local public health order and it would include all provisions in one place so that folks wouldn't get confused. I don't believe that we have that luxury today.
So I would just say that the only thing that is allowed to begin, there are a couple of things, but before May 1st, the only new businesses that are allowed to, or business functions that are allowed to begin are curbside pickup for retail, elective, and real estate shows, not open houses. And so until May 1st, those are the only businesses that can open that were not previously open. And so unless we think there is anything, I think we can proceed with what we have, knowing that those are really, we're probably just talking about curbside retail pickup primarily. And I believe that those businesses are aware, or we've already attempted to make them aware, that they should consider this mitigation plan to be required for them. But I do think prior to May 1st, we want to consider with the additional businesses that will be allowed to open, whether amendments to this are required. Again, once we've had a full opportunity to review the state's order.
And a great example of that's going to be a hair salon. Our mitigation protocol requires a 6-foot distance, which clearly is not going to work for a hair salon.
But again, state guidance has some pretty specific things. We just haven't had a chance to go through it. But I think you're right. That would be an obvious example of where we may need to consider making some amendments.
Sure, because ours is more restrictive. And practically speaking, our mitigation protocol as it stands right now would not allow a hair salon to be in business.
I'm sorry, Commissioner, to correct you, please.
That'd be great.
The proposed amended order does state, and it's in section, let me scroll through here. It would be amended section 4 C and D on the top of page 3. So it says, or the nature of the business requires closer proximity, and then D below, unless the nature of the business requires the removal of the face covering. And those were clearly in contemplation of those personal care services being allowed to open.
Thank you for that, Eric. I appreciate that. So in the interest of moving forward, before I entertain a motion, I have yet another question for legal. What I have in front of me is a redlined edition of this amended health order. Is that the way it's going to be adopted, or are we going to adopt a clean version?
I'm sorry, this muting thing is driving me crazy because my phone will go dark. I have to start it up again, and then I hit unmute. Sorry, just venting at Zoom for a little bit. I would clearly recommend that you allow us to accept the changes so we have a clean document for approval if that's the course that the board chooses.
So how do we accomplish that in the next 2 minutes?
Well, you have before you what is proposed to be amended. If you do take a motion and it passes, then a clean copy will be provided to you via email.
Perfect. I thought that was the case. So having said that.
So we would just move to adopt the amended standing place with the red line changes and then authorize your signature on it, I guess.
Well, you sound like you're well on the path towards making a motion there, Commissioner Monger. Oh, you know what? Let me, before you do, Doug, just a formality here. I did not receive any email that would qualify as public comment for our proceedings today. And I would ask the other commissioners and Deanna, Kendra, to let me know if you did in fact receive any written public comment for the purposes of this meeting.
While it wasn't marked as public comment, we did receive some input from the chamber. So I would just state that they made two requests, and I believe that both of those requests are in line with what we're adopting today. So the first was that they made a request that we follow the Safer at Home order and allow businesses to reopen in a phased approach with the Safer at Home guidelines in place, and that we utilize a checklist for businesses that they have to post on their front door to communicate whether or not they have implemented the efforts in order for the onus to be on the business owner along with the customer to ensure the safest measures are in place. And I believe that what we're doing aligns with both of those requests.
Did anybody else receive anything in that would be considered public comment for the purposes of today's meeting?
Okay. Can I just ask, just so I'm just so we have it on the record with other people listening, can one of you just summarize again the difference between what the public health order is and what it is now and how long it will be in effect? If you vote after, or maybe after you vote on it, if you decide to vote on it.
Okay, yeah, let's do that afterwards for communication purposes. And I guess one other thing maybe I overlooked, and this was stated in a meeting last week, but I would ask our public health officials to once again address the idea that the criteria that we were relying upon that would allow for this partial reopening, that we are in fact in compliance with that criteria.
Yes, that's a fair point to make because this is a statewide recommendation, but every locality can have a different situation. So I would summarize it by saying that our prevalence of disease has appeared to have trended down over the past 14 days. I would say that our plan for a surge of cases, if it were to occur, is now in place, and that the county and the hospital feel that they're adequately prepared if we were to have a surge. I would say that our testing capacity has improved dramatically from 5 weeks ago. I do not call it ideal, but I now call it adequate, in that we do have 24 to 48 hour turnaround on test results, and we can test all symptomatic people. And then a fourth leg of the table, so to speak, is do we have the adequate public health staffing to do full contact tracing? And we currently feel we do, and we also, as a part of that, have ongoing plans, and I can let Carrie comment on that if needed, about how we want to assure that we have adequate public health staffing for that.
So before Carrie jumps in on that, I think we were hoping that we were going to have a discussion about Carrie's proposal for increased public health staffing, and that I think we could accept your statement about the adequacy of our contact tracing and our plans for the future for the purposes of putting in place this amended health order. So,
yeah, I agree.
Just one other question, which is sort of a comment as well. I believe there was in the recommendations from CalPHO, from the state local public health officials, there was also a fifth recommendation, which was having strong social distancing protocols in place. And so I believe that I would ask Dr. Harrington or Carrie to confirm that this would qualify as meeting that fifth criteria as well for a phased reopening, to have strong social distancing in place.
No, Commissioner Melton, that's an excellent point. I fully agree with that. We do need to include that fifth kind of leg, if you will, of social distancing, and that we do have some ability to assess that with some state data on cell phone data, locations, and movement of people. And so currently we do rate very well as a county for our social distancing.
Great. Just to clarify, these business mitigation protocols would also fall in that category, correct?
Yes, they must incorporate social distancing.
All right. I think now would be a good time to hear a motion. Doug, were you ready?
Yeah, so Mr. Chairman, I would move that we approve the amended standing public health order 2020-03 requiring mitigation plan for all businesses, Rock County Board of Health, and accept the red line change versions that have been provided for us today at the meeting, and authorize your signature on it.
Second, with the comment that I believe under number 11, the order is in effect for 30 days from today. Is that correct? I guess that's a question.
Yes.
Just making sure. Okay, thanks, Eric.
That's what's proposed. If the motion passes, those blanks will be filled in and provided to the chair for signature. I also had one additional question. I apologize. The suggestion that you made in the additional mitigation protocols section, was there agreement to add language referencing the state order?
I believe that we pulled that from consideration and decided to just address that through communication efforts for the time being.
Thank you. Nothing further.
Great. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Well, this would be a good time to get out some discussion points. I think this continuing resolution is a good opportunity that we can figure out how we can move on with the governor's direction and our direction, trying to get businesses somewhat open and at a limited capacity and still preserve the safety, health, and welfare of our citizens and our community. So, my comment.
Yeah, I would just concur. I'm fully supportive of this. I believe that these kinds of mitigation measures are critical to businesses being able to reopen and have customers. And last week, I think when we discussed all of this, I emphasized, and I'll just emphasize again, the huge importance of personal responsibility. And in this case, we're talking about businesses being responsible for ensuring that we slow the spread of this virus with hand washing, with 6 foot distancing, with face masks, to make sure that we don't have to go back to a stay at home situation, but can continue to have folks interacting with each other, going to work, et cetera. So these measures are what is allowing us to do that safely.
Very good, thank you. Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. And so, Eric, you will be emailing me the final version, and I'll get that signed and returned to you later today.
For myself or Linnea, and then I'll work with the clerk to also have it attested and recorded.
Great. So I believe that the next item for discussion was to hear from Carrie Landreau, our public health director, regarding her proposal for supplementing or beefing up our public health capacity, especially as it relates to contact tracing. Do I have that about right, Carrie?
Yes, that's correct.
So please, why don't you go ahead and describe your request?
I think we have a PowerPoint, and we were going to ask Deanna to maybe share that so that we could see it. Is that all right with you, Carrie?
Sure. There have been a couple modifications, even just from a meeting this morning, but for the most part, yes.
Well, the PowerPoint is up on our screens right now, so okay. Go ahead.
Okay, so obviously, as we've discussed, one of the priorities is to make sure that we have a sustained reduction in cases for 14 days and that hospitals are able to meet the needs of any COVID surge without there being any additional crisis, that they can meet with their crisis standards of care, and that we're able to have the capacity for testing. And that's just not for public health alone, but that's community-wide, that as a community, we're able to test all people with COVID-19 symptoms. And then to be able to actively monitor and confirm cases in the context. And that's more of the part I want to talk about today, is just the plan for immediate and expedited contact tracing. If we go to the next slide. Next slide, please. Whoever is controlling. Okay. So really looking at three different levels of contact tracing and what our testing capacity looks like. At the micro level, we're looking at individuals. So we have several different options available for individuals who need to be tested. Obviously, UC Health, our partner, in testing, has their testing site available for individuals who are symptomatic. And so that's more on the individual level. Once a case is identified, either by public health, a provider out in the community, or by the UC Health testing site, that's an opportunity for the contact tracing to come in. And then at the meso level, we're looking more from the public health perspective of community testing events, and those were demonstrated by several of the events we've already had. We've already had the health and Steamboat events several times. We're doing Hayden and the North Route events this week. We've already done South Route, and one of the reasons for doing those events is really to get an idea throughout the entire county of how we are doing for COVID-19. We want to make sure that we have data to support various locations within the county. And so I'd like to continue these testing opportunities and have this be fluid, and obviously continue to have conversations with our testing partners in the community, be it UC Health or the other providers in the community. But I think as opportunities present themselves to do some community testing, to do some surveillance, that'll be important as we move forward. More on the macro level, and this will tie in with some of the other testing capacities that are available to us in the future, whether it's serology or antibody testing, but making sure that we are keeping a close eye on the surveillance of the community as we lift these restrictions, doing some check-ins with varieties of populations, different demographics, doing some more specific surveillance of socioeconomic sectors of the society, of the county, just to make sure that we are keeping a close eye on COVID and we're staying ahead of any outbreaks. So then next slide. As far as a contact tracing strategy, the recommendation that has been floating around from CDPHE's, the CDC, is to have one contact tracer per 1,000 residents for contact tracing. And so what I'm looking at more is one contact tracer per 5,000, but also having some other additional supports available should we need them. Ideally, we would have this coverage 7 days a week. And the idea behind that is really we're getting positive test results back in the evening, on the weekends. And for this to be effective, we all know that there needs to be sort of this model of test, contact trace, or test, isolate, contact trace, and then go back through the cycle again in order for it to be a true contact tracing model. So the 7 day a week coverage is something that we in the health department have been supporting, and we've been doing our very best in order to get contact tracing needs met immediately and within the hours after we do receive the positive test. But obviously there are limited staff in the health department right now working on this, and that's where this other model comes in. So fortunately, even since this PowerPoint was developed, I've assigned two task leads for contact tracing. And they are actually retired public health service agency service members and worked for the CDC. So we couldn't have any better contact tracing task leads than have come forward in order to support the health department with contact tracing. And so these task leads are now going to, they are going to facilitate the contact tracing teams underneath them, who are comprised of a variety of medical professionals. We have some volunteers. There are 8 people that have been identified who will work underneath these two contact trace leads. And so I had a call with them this morning. We did a Zoom to talk about what is the process. And essentially that's outlined here. A positive COVID-19 test result is received. And then our public health nurses have the conversation with the person who has been identified as a positive test, just because that's important from the clinical standpoint. And then they will notify the person who has had the positive test result that somebody from the contact tracing team will be in contact with them. And that's then where we punt it over to the contact tracing team. And the contact tracing team digs into all the close contacts that that person has had, and making sure we have a really extensive form that identifies for the last 14 days, who have you come in contact with, where have you been, what have you done. And so that level of detail will be provided by these other members of the contact tracing team. And that we already have in place the self-quarantine recommendations for people who have been in contact with a positive case. And so essentially the contact tracing team will facilitate that letter that we already have formulated to be given to the close contacts and make sure that those recommendations that we in the public health department have already been doing, but the contact tracing team will then share those recommendations for quarantine with the close contacts. And then as appropriate, if a person becomes symptomatic and is in need of testing, then we can refer them to the UC Health, to the testing center, or we can make other accommodations through public health. So essentially what we're trying to formulate through this contact tracing team led by these two individuals with the public health from the Public Health Service Agency is to make sure that we have a really quick turnaround time between when a positive case is identified and making sure that any close contacts self-quarantine and are tested as necessary, really as a best practice to mitigate any disease spread that could come as a result of lifting restrictions. If you have any questions about this slide, I'd be happy to answer them.
I have a quick question, Carrie. It sure. appears that you would be relying upon UC Health for testing subsequent to the identification of a COVID-19 positive test rather than performing that test ourselves or yourself?
Yeah, so what we've been doing in partnership with UC Health is the health department has been concentrating on these larger scale community testing efforts to do some outreach into pockets that may not have otherwise accessed testing, and so more of the macro level testing, and then partnering with UC Health on the individual micro level testing. So that's not what I would foresee it continuing as with this model.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of questions. I guess one is just confirming my understanding, and I think partially just for the public. We would anticipate as things are gradually reopened and people are having more interactions with each other, that we would see an increase in the number of cases. Is that correct? Is that not?
I'll let Dr. Harrington, if he wants to weigh in on what he would anticipate happening. I know from CDPHE calls that I've been on and the information I received that is an expectation. But what the parameters of that, as far as how many cases we could anticipate increasing by, I can't speak to that. I'd prefer to defer to Dr. Harrington.
Yeah, and just to clarify, I'm not necessarily asking by how many, but just clarifying why this is needed, because we're expecting to see an increase in cases, and what we need to be able to do is isolate the virus and try to prevent community spread from occurring again. Do I have that right?
Right. So in theory, we're now adding this extra bucket of tools that we didn't have a month and a half ago. So this should allow us to not rely on some of the other more blunt tools. So if we're effective and can do a better job with this, then maybe we wouldn't see a big increase in cases, right? We would get a positive case in the community and quickly identify it and do the things that we didn't do a month and a half ago. So as we might see an increase in cases as we release the restrictions. But I think that the concept is that by employing these other kind of public health tools, we'll do a better job of mitigating those infections and maybe keep it from being another significant surge.
Thank you. And so then I thought that was the case, but wanted to get that clarification. And then just a question about the idea of using volunteers. I believe we're using volunteers to lead task forces as well as operate as some of the contact tracers. I'm glad that there are people who are willing to do this on a volunteer basis. And I guess I wonder what the risk is to us of people who maybe decide they don't want to do it anymore, or is there a high enough level accountability for volunteers to complete this work? Do we feel confident about that?
Yeah, absolutely, Commissioner Melton. I can speak to that. So just a couple clarifications. When we use the term volunteer, I think people become anxious probably, and as I did also, about HIPAA confidentiality, making sure that we really have procedures in place to protect the privacy of people whose information is being shared. And so the volunteers have signed a confidentiality agreement. They have also, they have a required contact tracing class that they go through. They are only receiving information through an encrypted data sharing process. There are a lot of things that are put in place to assure to community members that this is a confidential arrangement. Even though these people happen to be volunteers, the majority of them are health professionals. And I would say, as far as sustainability, one of the things that I have been impressed with is the level of volunteerism from these retired health professionals. It seems to be a longer standing volunteer commitment, seeing this as a pandemic and the opportunity to serve the community. And so I would say it's a little bit different situation than just a normal volunteer. These are retired health professionals who see this as a cause that they are committed to. And so obviously that feels a little different than a one and done type of commitment that we might see from other volunteers.
And then what, sorry, Greg, go ahead. Dr. Henson, I think you were going to say something. You can go ahead before I.
Well, you know, another consideration here too is, I think, well, so these people who are testing positive, ideally should be in conversation with their primary care providers, who also should be getting the results. And our contact tracing is not necessarily a medical evaluation interaction. But it is important that, and this is what the training goes through too, is that our contact tracers do provide positive cases with references for information from the state health department on symptoms and what to do. And also they do tell the patients they need to contact their primary care provider to go over medical issues. There is though some obligation in our contact tracers to at least be aware of when somebody is having problems and be able to direct them to the right place to get medical care.
Thanks. So my final question, Carrie, I think you said you have 8 people identified to do this work already. So that sounds to me like you've been able to identify more than the 1 per 5,000. Personally, I mean, I would feel most comfortable if we really did have for you the 1 per 1,000, so a total of 25 people that are available on an as needed basis, not that they would be working the 7 days a week, but I would hate for us to overwhelm these 8 people and we don't have anybody waiting in the wings. So do you, are you looking for county? We had talked before about possibly some county staff supporting, and I know they're not medical professionals. What are your thoughts on that currently?
I think that, so I had exchanged a few emails with HR, with Kathy, about identifying a few more county employees. What I'd like to do moving forward is let the 2 task leads have they're having a meeting with their 8 people and really get their feet under them, and also take a look at, we have a pretty robust process with between the documents being used, the actual contact tracing form document, all of that. I would really like to see what their impression is, since they really are subject matter experts with many, many years of experience, and have them have their meeting with the 8 identified people, go through the process, see how it's working, and during the course of that, get an assessment from them of what they think they're going to need, because I do defer to them and their level of expertise on how they want this to look moving forward. And I think they certainly know that there are more resources available, but I think it's important for them to get their process down and make sure that they are confident with the mechanisms that we already have in place.
That all sounds great. I just want to, obviously Tim and Doug can weigh in as well, but I just want to express my support for us having some people available for backup so that we make sure we have a robust ability to do contact tracing and we don't kind of get overwhelmed at some point. And again, it's more just a preparedness. I can't imagine our numbers are going to get so high that we're going to need 25 people all at once. But just, I'd rather personally see us be prepared and have people that can be moved in to support if needed. But I agree with you. I respect your opinion on deferring to the leads to make a final determination on that. So thanks. Those are all my questions.
So this is Doug, and I have a couple of comments. So first off, you know, my citizen government and being, you know, not knowing exactly the public part of this thing and trying to understand and what we've understood so far, I mean, we have defined the community. We have redefined the community. It's all local community. And we now have had the local community under quarantine, basically, semi-quarantine for the last 14 years. You know, last 20 days now. So if we're sitting in a situation, I agree with Dr. Harrington that based on not having the outside infiltration into our system and our community, I don't think our numbers are going to change that much. I could be totally wrong, but just the accountant in me just tells me that, hey, I think we're going to be good unless we start seeing some outside infiltration. In fact, you know, that's where our biggest risk lies as well. And I don't think until we have that outside risk and the relaxing of the nightly rentals and having some community interaction with outside community people that we're going to be having that. I would concur totally with Beth. You know, Carrie and Brian, you guys are, you know, you need to tell us what you need, and through the EOC and the ESF, and you know, and we'll try to help you provide what you want. And again, I appreciate you guys driving this thing and figuring out what you need to have on that thing. I have a driving question that's kind of been burning me, being the accountant it's been burning for a couple weeks now. Who the heck's paying for all these testings as well? So, I mean, when they go to UC Health, do they bill back their insurance company if they have insurance? If they don't, or if it's our community testing, does the is the community testing things, is that going through the EOC to actually the cost of processing the tests and all those things? And so if you guys could answer, that would be my comments too. Thank you.
Commissioner Munger, the PCR testing to diagnose infection is currently not charged to patients. There's a little bit of ambiguity on some of the private labs, but there is regulatory direction from state and federal level saying that they're not supposed to charge for the diagnostic tests. So all the public health tests that we've done have not been charged to patients. The UC Health tests have not been charged. That may be a different story when we get the antibody tests. I foresee that those will probably be charged.
Okay, thank you. Carry on, Carrie.
Well, I was just going to say something, just more of a contextual comment. So obviously, COVID-19 is forefront of mind for individuals in the community when you hear public health. I do want to clarify that, yes, this is a pandemic, but it's not all that public health does and will do in the future. And I think that's important to keep in mind because, yes, we have the entirety right now of our resources dedicated to COVID. What we also have it coming in the future is a resumption of our normal public health activities and the expectation that we will be able to resume those activities as COVID continues to be a part of our workflow. And so I think it's worth noting, I would say, that we still have other communicable diseases in the community that aren't a part of the COVID preparedness and response efforts. We have child fatality reviews we do. We have immunizations work to do. We have social determinants of health. There are a lot of different facets of public health other than COVID-19. And I guess my concern or just maybe a comment for moving forward is how does that look for our community moving forward? We can talk about contact tracing and certainly the devoted resources for contact tracing And we certainly we have a public health nurse that's fantastic, and we've been able to contract nurses through our staffing company. But as we move forward, I think there'll have to be some additional discussions about how the overall work of public health gets done in conjunction with all the COVID response efforts. I think that's just a bigger conversation to have with the Board of Health moving forward. So I just want to draw your attention to that. As far as that, we can go to the next slide, if you, Deanna. So this is just an example of a post-suppression reopening strategy, and we've actually modified this to an extent, but what I was thinking is continuing to do some community testing on Wednesdays and Saturdays, just because of workflow, that seems to be, those seem to be the better days for us to be able to do that. We would need to have contract nurses continue to work in order to be able to facilitate those testing sites, because we only have just the one dedicated Rauch County nurse. So the contract nursing piece is separate from the contact tracing. So the contact tracing team would be comprised of these individuals that have come forth from the community, and then county employees dedicated to contact tracing, but then in a separate buckets, I would say, are the contract nurses in order to support testing. So those are the two different facets of staffing that we need in order to keep our current community site testing going, in addition to really ramping up even more the contact tracing, as is indicated by a potential increase in positive cases with the lifting of the restrictions. If you go to the next slide. So this is just an example of the different teams. So we're calling them Team A and Team B, for lack of a more creative name. But so we would have the team A and Team B for the contact tracing. And I just put it the length of time that this is needed, sometime until the end of June. We don't really know. That'll have to be reassessed as far as what our need is as we see the evolution of COVID. Again, testing in clinical services, we want to continue to be able to test and reach out to some of the pockets. If there were to be an outbreak of some sort, we want to be able to test individuals associated with that and continue to do surveillance. We have identified for any community testing sites that we've had that we do need three county staff. It's helpful to have county staff to help with ID checks, to help direct traffic, to be kind of a runner for the EOC. And so having those county staff available is very helpful. And then again, UC Health as sort of our testing partner that we have been able to send people over there or whatever, we may need to support them with staff as needed in the future if they identify that they need some support there, or if there are other partnership opportunities that we can identify between their testing site and public health. Okay, you wanna go to the next slide? Yep, that's it. One of the things I guess I would like to highlight is that contact tracing is one piece and the testing is a piece, but I don't wanna lose the responsibility of every resident in the social distancing and the really critical nature of that. We obviously are committed to contact tracing and testing and all of the efforts that are going around that as other medical providers in the community are. I'm a little anxious that because of the lifting of restrictions, then also will come a lax attitude about social distancing. And I would just reiterate how important that is, that everybody keep that top of mind and we all maintain our level of responsibility towards keeping this under control in our community. Does anybody have any questions for me? Or for Dr. Arrington?
I don't have any questions. I think this all looks great, and I would really commend you for your work in getting this contact tracing task force put together and making sure that we have the capacity we need to
control the spread of the virus as we move into this next phase, because that's really what we're looking at, is having it under control.
So, Carrie, I have a question. When we hired the contract nurses, they were for a limited time frame. Does your plan recognize the need to extend those contracts, and are those nurses available to have their time extended?
Yes and yes. So we need, they are available, and I would commend the staffing company for how flexible they have been, for the quality of staffing that they have provided to us. It has been exemplary. We have just really been fortunate with the nurses that have been provided and their commitment to the community. So I would foresee this being an ongoing basis. And so I don't know how that should be handled more formally about extending their contract or extending their services to the county. If anybody has any recommendations for how that should be handled, I can submit whatever I need to, or do whatever I need to make sure that we have the staff that we need.
You don't have the need then to hire additional contract nurses?
No, we've been able to, the way that they have been spaced out throughout all 7 days, we've been able to have every day covered, and then also additional supports available for our community testing. We have enough. Again, I think that one of the issues we will have to look at is that this staff between the contract nurses is ample for COVID specific response. But as we move into public health, resuming some of our previous contracts that have been temporarily on hold because of the pandemic, we'll have to see what the staffing is going to need to look like for those commitments that are within those other contracts.
Thank you.
So for right now, the outside contract nurses is coming out of the black hole. So it's called the pandemic relief. So, I don't know that we need to do anything. I mean, we're already tentatively approved, the concept of a revolving budget appropriation for the COVID-19 part of it. Until we remove the emergency declaration, which we've also talked about how and when that's happening, that won't happen right away either. So I don't know about the other two commissioners, but it sounds like that's appropriate. I guess the question, that ends up being a different question if it's going to be ended up doing some other work that's outside of the emergency response of the COVID-19. So.
Mm-hmm. And I would just like to thank the commissioners for your support for the staffing and the response efforts. I mean, I can't say enough good things about Mo and the Emergency Operations Center and the commitment that Route County has had to the residents. It's really, it has been just top notch. And so I'd like to thank all of you for your support during all of this.
Well, thank you for that comment. I think we've done a pretty good job operating as a team here, recognizing what the problems are and applying the resources necessary to confront that problem. So thank you, Carrie and Dr. Harrington, for the level of professionalism you guys have shown throughout this crisis. It makes our job as commissioners quite a bit easier when we can trust the advice that we're receiving from our public health officials. Do we need to provide direction to Carrie here, do you guys think? Or we've already provided the direction. Carry on and do what you've been doing.
Yeah, I think it's maybe just providing a statement of support for the use of county employees as needed to be available to support contact tracing.
Yeah, and we're supporting all of that anyhow, just trying to make sure we keep our employees working. And I
I want to make sure that they get the training protocol that Kerry, that you would, you and Dr. Harrington would want to provide to that. But you know, certain people, you know, I don't want to throw anybody into a risk situation, but so they have the training protocol to be able to undertake that. You know, I really appreciate the volunteer force, because they probably already have a lot of that. Those procedures and thoughts, thought patterns, all into their brain already. So, but yeah, I'm all right with whatever we need to ramp up. We'll figure out a process to ramp up with the employees if we need to.
Kendra, I think we've expanded our list of people that need thank you notes. You might want to find out who those individuals are, because people that are willing to volunteer in this kind of situation are real citizen servants, and they deserve our appreciation.
I'll work on that.
Thank you. Any further discussion for today's public health meeting?
I guess I just wonder how long people have, and whether we have time to talk about travel. We had indicated we might have some discussion about that, but I don't know how long people are able to stay.
You know, I don't know that it's a question for me, at least, of time, but maybe going back to the taking some time to read the public health order we have in front of us from the governor might make more sense, and we would have time tomorrow to discuss, except that we do have Kerry and Dr. Harrington with us today. So maybe getting some general thoughts from them, if they have time.
That's fine with me. And we also have Wednesday, so we can continue the conversation then. But maybe if we have time, we could get it started today.
So I guess I'd invite Kerry or Dr. Harrington to make some general comments about travel as it exists today, and if there are items about travel that we should be concerned about moving forward.
Well, we did. Dr. Harrington and I had a quick conversation about this right before the meeting. And one of the things that we identified was within the governor's executive order, it seems like some of the risk for Rout County is mitigated within that order, if I'm understanding it correctly, because of his limitations for recreational travel to 10 miles or less. Is that the understanding that you have in relation to Rout County and our potential risk points?
So I think that goes back under the heading. It would appear that the public health order that was issued might not have been quite as strict as what the executive order suggested.
Okay.
I think the broad question is about how much risk do we believe there is related to travel, and what strategies, if any, do we think we need to employ? And I guess I'm starting to feel like we're in the twilight zone a little bit, where we've had this conversation over and over and over and haven't had any resolution on whether we're going to do anything or not.
Well, I think in fairness to us, we needed to wait and see what was going to come out of the state.
That's fine. I just know we've been talking about it for a while. So I guess I'd ask Dr. Harrington and Kerry and us if we believe something local, like an executive order or a very coordinated communication effort, which apparently is kind of the track that Summit County took. You know, Eagle County took more of an executive order approach. What, if anything, we think might be necessary?
Yes, you know, there's some challenges with this whole travel thing, because do you approach it from the standpoint of, if you don't live in our county, kind of don't come here? But that's problematic, because if somebody lives 2 miles across the border over towards Craig, to me that functionally is kind of the same thing as being within our county. The Eagle executive order does approach it that way, though. They define who can be in the county and who can't, and what reasons you'd have to travel in there. I don't know exactly how they're enforcing that. we were able to take a different angle when we did the short-term lodging restriction, because that would be an aspect of a different way of looking at this, where you pick certain activities or things that are going on that seem to really play into the travel world, and then you focus on those particular things. I'll be curious to read through the public health order this morning to see what ideas that gives to us on this whole travel issue and how it plays with certain activities. I mean, we've got the challenges with public recreation lands, you know, whether it's talking about campgrounds or different places that people can come and recreate on. So I'm struggling with that right now to decide what the right approach on that is.
Well, good. You can join us in struggling and being confused and maybe frustrated at times. Hopefully, we can have a more robust discussion about this on Wednesday when we've all had more time to digest what's come out of the state.
I think that's a great idea. And I also would just encourage us to do what we've done before, which is identify what problem, if any, we would be trying to solve, and to be really specific about what that is, because I think that'll lead us to the right path in terms of how to address it.
I agree. Okay, is there anything else we'd like to discuss in the time that we don't have remaining?
Todd had some questions about the construction guidance. Do you want to have discussion about those? Do we want to invite him to come talk to us? Essentially, just the biggest one was, right now the construction guidelines say, and this isn't in our executive order, it's in the guidelines, which is, in my understanding, are under the control of our building department. They state that you can have one person per 300 square feet to a maximum of 5 people on residential construction sites. And so we did give him the direction that he could consider outdoor space, but that maximum of 5 is still standing. And so the question he's getting is, considering that we allowed our public health order number 2, which limited the size of gatherings to 5, to expire, whether that maximum could be increased to 10 people on site. I would be in support of that, with still having the caveat of one person per 300 square feet, but that they could consider outdoor space if people are working outdoors in a dedicated way.
Just to make sure I understand what you're proposing, is that, given that was one person per 300 square feet, that would translate into 5 people on a 1500 square foot house. If someone was working on a 3000 square foot house, what I'm hearing you say is that if they could maintain the 6-foot distancing, that those projects would be allowed to have upwards of 10 people working inside of that 3000 square foot house.
That's what I'm suggesting. And I guess I would just make sure to clarify, I think I could be wrong, but I believe the structure of our guidance for construction is really that this is being managed by our building department and is not a part of our public health orders. And therefore, all that would be needed is direction to Todd Carr. So I guess I would want to clarify that I'm correct about that. And then, yes, what you said is what, so he sent an email just to me, and I'm not sure why. I think it was in response to another email I sent. I can forward this to you, but that's been the request he's been getting, that he wanted us to consider. And I said I would bring it up during this meeting.
And that under any set of circumstances, even under a 10,000 square foot house, it would still be a maximum of 10 workers inside of that residential construction project. Did you hear me, Beth?
Yeah, I'm just looking. I'd need to look at the exact language of the guidance. And this is why I was asking, do we maybe want to just have Todd come talk to us rather than trying to do it this way?
I think that would be appropriate. And then the other question I would have, would there be an additional exception for workers on the outside of the building?
So I get a little nervous of us micromanaging that the way we, you know, we came up with some direction before, and that's why we ended up having the public health order number two. And then that's why we, I thought we kind of had this conversation last week. That's why we were kind of allowing public health order number two to expire. So, you know, I guess we continue with our objectives is that we're having construction moving on, and that we're doing it in a safe manner. And I guess I'm, and then we were coming up with plans and the rest. And so I don't know whether we're even in the ability and the knowledge level to be determining, maybe Tim, you are, but I don't know that I am about what's exactly the right number, whether it's 4 or 7 or 8. And I appreciated the number per square footage and the rest. We talked about the inside versus outside and that they weren't the same. So, yeah, let's have Todd come talk to us and give him. And we want to keep it in the direction of the building department as well, and not unless we're going to have a new public health order on it.
No. We don't want to do that.
I suggest then, if it's all right with you guys, that I'll forward this to you that Todd sent to me so you can see it. And obviously Mark, I'll include you as well. And then suggest that Todd schedule a time to talk with us. I think what he's looking for is just approval from the BCC that his guidance is in line with the intent of our public health orders and our business mitigation plans. And so I think letting him ask questions to confirm that is probably the best path forward. It looks like Eric might be trying to get in. I'm not sure. Maybe he just left his phone unmuted.
No, I have a suggestion, if I could, please. If you adjourn as the Board of Health, can you reconvene as the commissioners briefly? Because I have some practical questions, and I don't want to keep Dr. Harrington or Carrie on the phone to address administrative concerns.
I'm available.
I'll be fine. I can do that.
So I'll just send this email to Todd then. And I guess, Brian, I'll include Brian and Carrie. And if you guys have any thoughts that you'd like us to consider as we give direction to Todd, you can just let us know about those.
Will do. Thank you.
All right. If there's no objection, I would like to adjourn our meeting as the Board of Public Health. Hearing no objections, we are adjourned. And now we, the commissioners and our legal staff, will reconvene as the Rouse County Board of County Commissioners. Eric?
Yes, so two things. You had asked earlier about the Eagle County exemption request, and I've reviewed the letter that was submitted through that process by Eagle County as to the what they were asking for and the response from the state. And I'm not sure it clears up much at all, but there was no specific exemption request. For example, an example of that might be, in my mind, an allowance for hair salons to open. But it wasn't like that. It just says, that Eagle County is requesting exemptions from the provisions of the state orders that impose stringent stay-at-home requirements, prohibit travel except for necessary activities, strictly prohibit gatherings of any size, and then disallow certain types of businesses to reopen. So they were asking for a very general and blanket exemption to give them more latitude for their local orders. And the state's response to that was equally general, and they don't state at all what they're approving, other than they go to great lengths at recognizing the steps that Eagle County took to get to that point, and cited their dashboard, the decrease in cases, the strict social distancing protocols that were implemented, and nowhere in the response letter does it say, we hereby approve X. It just recognizes the process for asking for an exemption cites the rationale that Eagle County provided for stepping things down, and then basically says, we think your rationale and proposed step down plan are thoughtful, and Eagle County is well, and Eagle County is well positioned to take this next step.
And Eric, as you looked at their most recent public health order, was there anything in there that struck you as being more permissive than the state's safer at home order? Or maybe you haven't reviewed all of that in depth, but it seemed more restrictive to me because they implemented the travel rules, and there was something else in there that I don't know. It was just confusing to me because it didn't seem less restrictive than the safer at home order in my understanding.
Now, I've reviewed that one and several others, so I can't keep them all straight, and now the new state order on top of it. But my impression is that had the state issued its safer at home order last week, then Eagle County would not have even made this request for an exemption. That's my impression. Because I think you're right.
They were asking for an exemption from something that didn't even exist, which is really confusing.
I'm not sure that I agree with that, because the state's response was April 23rd. Eagle's request was last week, was April 16th, a week prior to that.
So they maybe bought themselves 4 days of safer at home instead of stay at home.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
One other thing, I sent Beth an email about this, but in reviewing, and I'm doing the same thing, skimming through the safer at home order / guidance, it does require all businesses and government functions to do certain things, including, and that I'm not mincing words here, they say deputize a workplace coordinator charged with addressing COVID-19 issues. And then it goes on to describe various social distancing and health monitoring, signage, and other kinds of things too, cleaning and disinfecting requirements. So the reason I wanted to bring that up now is I think we want to get in front of this, even though we're already not in front of this, to maybe appoint somebody to be the workplace coordinator and sort through these various requirements. I think facilities has virtually done all of the stuff that's required here, but they may not be on site on all the various sites that the county owns to do the monitoring.
So Eric, your understanding of maybe perhaps why they use the word deputize has to do with also making sure there's compliance, that person is helping to ensure compliance at that work site. That's what I would assume.
Yeah, I think that's the implication, right? But I don't think you need to swear anybody in like the sheriff would normally do under deputizing somebody, but appoint somebody who has oversight ability to make sure we're in compliance with this order. We're expecting other businesses to be in compliance with ours.
Yeah, and so making sure that people are wearing masks, making sure that temp checks are being recorded, all that kind of stuff.
Right. Although the temperature checks being recorded, I'd still suggest that the state order does not require us to document exactly what an employee's temperature is and whatnot. It just it does require though symptom monitoring, including daily temperature checks. Then they provide a sample form, which if you use that form, obviously you would be tracking actual temperatures and other symptoms of each named employee. I think the one form that we've already been using or supposed to have been using still is sufficient to meet that requirement.
But your point is that there should be someone at the county, probably in each building, who is responsible for ensuring that people are signing that form, that people are wearing face masks, et cetera. Is that your suggestion, Eric, based on the Safer at Home order?
Yeah, yes, thank you.
So that sounds like a job. Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, isn't that that position that Ray was asking for, that was going to be the new facilities director? And
a little late for that.
I don't know if that is that position on hold too now as well, or did we, is it, because I thought we would already send out the advertisements on that too. So I'm not sure. But yeah, Mark, looks like you had drafted into that one.
Mark needs to deputize one person per building. I don't know if Mark is still sitting by his computer or not. His name is still here, but he's not chiming in. So, Eric, you might want to just follow up with him, too.
Great. Thank you, Eric. Okay. Did you have anything, any other items you wanted to bring to our attention?
No, sir.
Thank you very much. Do you, Doug, Beth, anything else we need to talk about today? Great.
Nope.
Matt, sounded like you had one. You good? Okay. Mark, if you're online, let us know if there's something else we need to know about.
No, sir. Thank you, Commissioner.
Great. We will see you all tomorrow. What time, Robin? 10:30 for the town hall? I'm sure she's going to send us out an email. So.
Yes.
Tomorrow, 10:30. So then I guess I have a question then too. So I haven't even looked at tomorrow's agenda yet. So are we going to have our normal business after that town hall then? And our,
yeah,
I got a set of accounts payable for us. So, okay, good. Thank you.
Kendra adjusted the schedule.
And I think, Robin, if I understood correctly, town hall starts at 10:30, but we need to be available before that, probably around 10-ish.
10:10. So I'm getting all the information from the city and I'll send it out.
Including the Zoom mic.
Exactly. I asked for that from Winnie, but I haven't gotten it back yet.
Very good. Thank you.
Well, we have powder to powder our nose and we get lunch with it too. And we can send lunch.
Well, I don't know about the powder, but. Okay. Thanks, commissioners.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.